You clock out. We clock in. Welcome to the Torn by Sports Lunch Break.
Welcome to this edition of the Torn by Sports Lunch Break. Joining me today is Gina Mizell from the Oregonian, who's the beat writer for Oregon State. How are you doing today, Gina?
I'm doing great, Grant. How are you?
I'm doing well. It is a beautiful day in Salt Lake, and it looks like it's lining up for some really nice weather come game day tomorrow. Will you be flying with the team?
No. We take our own flight. So I'm flying out to Salt Lake City later on today, and we're recording this on Friday morning. So I'm flying out Friday afternoon, and I'm happy to hear that the weather's good. It's been a pretty rainy week here in Portland. Fall and winter is kind of starting to settle in, so the rainy time is here. So I'm looking forward to hopefully some good weather out in Salt Lake City.
Yeah, it should be enjoyable. The question I'm wondering about is now, how enjoyable will the game be? But, one of the interesting things is I know you were at practice yesterday, I believe. I'm curious as to what the general vibe is around the Oregon State program as they prepare to head into Salt Lake.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's been a really tough season in Corvallis and Gary Anderson's first year of his rebuilding project. They're the only remaining winless team in Pac-12 play. They're obviously coming off a loss to Colorado, which hadn't won a Pac-12 game in their last 14 tries. So it's tough right now, like I said. But, you know, coaches are trying to toe that line between, you know, still being tough on the players and expecting more. And Gary Anderson's been very blunt and very intense about how this is really going to test a lot of guys and see if they still want to be a part of this program and if, you know, college football is for them, basically. But I think in the bigger picture, I think everybody understands that this is a long-term project and a long-term process. So, you know, it's hard right now. And Gary Anderson kind of joked after the Colorado game that someday we'll all look back on this time and smile and laugh and say, remember when, and you know, kind of when they've started winning games, they'll look back on that time. So, yeah, I mean, it's certainly not fun for anybody in the middle of it right now, but, you know, they're just trying to get better. They're trying to grind through things and trust that, you know, eventually this is going to turn around. But right now, not so much.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Gary Anderson has, you know, everyone's watched the drive, has heard him say he likes to build. And those comments you brought up about him saying, you know, some of the guys need to think about what they want to do with their futures is he hinting at maybe a bunch of transfers coming up as he tries to get his guys into the program?
I don't know if it'll be a bunch of transfers, but I think it's pretty safe to assume that there will be some natural attrition at the end of the season, just based on, again, guys who maybe think they want to do something else because they're being really hard on them. And it's kind of easy to start something is what Anderson always says, you know, in life in general. You start a new job, you start a new diet, you start a new workout, and that's kind of the fun part because it's new. But when you get into the middle of things, and especially when the season's not going well and you sort of have to push through those hard times, a lot of people in general aren't necessarily made for that type of pressure or made for that type of hard work. So, is he going to be kicking people out? Is he going to be, you know, telling people to show him the door and say, hey, maybe you want to go do something else? I don't know if I go that far, but I think there's just going to be kind of some natural attrition as guys who were recruited by the old coaching staff maybe decide to do something else. And then, yeah, as the recruiting classes continue to build up for Anderson and kind of get his own guys in there, as you said.
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously being the only winless team in Pac-12 play right now has got to be tough. But how does that compare to maybe your expectations coming into the year for this Gary Anderson program?
Yeah, well, at the beginning of the year, I set the over-under at 4 wins, and one of the, when you look at the schedule and you sort of pencil in wins and losses, I penciled the Colorado game as a win for the Beavers. I thought they would perhaps be able to get that game at home. So that's probably the only game that has not gone the way that I expected. But it's been a really interesting season in a lot of ways because, you know, you look at this team, they lost at Michigan, obviously, and they lost to Stanford. But in that Stanford game, there were a lot of encouraging signs. And then they went into a bye week and then went into a game at Arizona on October 10th. And at that point, Arizona had just been blown out by UCLA and Stanford in back-to-back weeks. And you kind of thought, huh, maybe this rebuild is going ahead of schedule and maybe they have a chance to go down there and steal a game in Tucson. And then since then, it's just obviously been really tough. They got blown out at Arizona, got blown out at Washington State, where they gave up 45 points in the first half, and then against Colorado, just weren't able to score enough to get over the hump against the Buffaloes. So, numbers-wise, if you look strictly at the record, I'd say that this season has maybe fallen just a tad below expectations, just because I thought they would get that Colorado game. But overall, I figured this would be a tough season, just based on the fact that this is a team that, again, is in their first year under a new head coach. They're starting a freshman at quarterback. They had to replace 9 starters on defense. And simply in this landscape of the Pac-12, somebody has to be bad. Somebody has to be the low man on the totem pole, so to speak. So with how deep and talented this league is right now, I thought that it would take a while for Oregon State to reestablish itself as a competitive program. So that's kind of held true, at least to this point.
Yeah, no, I it's interesting. So here in Utah, where all of Utah fans for the most part are watching the drive, so they're seeing a lot of the Oregon State pieces. And, you know, 2 episodes ago, they built that the second half of the Washington State game was a really good building block. And then, it was a close game with Colorado where it was a battle and Oregon State was never out of it and had a shot to win, but, you know, just really couldn't finish some drives with Nick Mitchell at quarterback. Do you feel like that the Beavers have been able to build some momentum coming into this game, even though there have been losses?
I think in certain areas, yes, and I think we're going to obviously find out quite a lot based on how they perform against Utah in a pretty hostile environment, and obviously going up against a team that I'm sure is not happy coming off of that loss to USC. But I think perhaps the biggest stumbling block right now is the quarterback situation, because Seth Collins, the starter, the guy who's played for most of the year, he missed practice yesterday with an undisclosed injury. He's now ruled as a game-time decision. I just got that news earlier this morning. So a lot of the optimism, I think, was surrounding the offense, because they thought that maybe they had figured out how to use both Collins and Nick Mitchell, like you mentioned, in different types of situations. There were times against Colorado where they were on the field at the same time, which was kind of an interesting wrinkle. And Dave Baldwin, the offensive coordinator, said on Wednesday that was the best practice the offense had had since he had been there. So that's a pretty strong statement. So you feel like you're sort of maybe gaining some momentum with those quarterbacks, with Ryan Nall, who's emerged as a good running back. He had 122 yards against Colorado. And then you perhaps lose your starting quarterback, that sort of just derails everything. So we'll see what happens on the offensive side of the ball and if they're able to get anything going against Utah's really, really good defense. And then on the defensive side for Oregon State, again, they've said that they've been encouraged by the second half against Washington State, where they shut the Cougars out. I mean, I've never really quite seen a change that dramatic, where you go from giving up 45 points to giving up 0. And then obviously holding Colorado to 17 points, which, take that with a grain of salt since it's Colorado. So there have been a lot of changes on Oregon State's defense, particularly in the secondary and primarily due to injuries. They're missing their 2 starting cornerbacks in this game, in Tristan Jacoud and Larry Scott. So, Travis Wilson, we'll see if he can bounce back after throwing 4 picks against USC. But, again, this is the toughest challenge that Oregon State has faced all season long. And so any progress, it's going to have to show itself in a really big way against Utah if they want to be able to stay competitive in this game.
Yeah, no, I mean, you mentioned Travis Wilson coming bouncing back. The good news I think Utah fans are holding on to about that is Travis has had kind of a roller coaster season where he'll have a not so good game, but follow it up with a pretty good game for him. And he hasn't been turning over the ball like that, so I'm expecting him to bounce back pretty well. Speaking of quarterbacks, though, I mean, you've been at practice, they're using 2 quarterbacks now. How are Mitchell and Collins holding up, or how do they feel about this whole 2 quarterback system? I mean, Collins went from starting to now, I think he had less series than Mitchell did in the Colorado game.
Yeah, well, again, the first thing is it'll depend on Collins' health. But as far as just mentally handling that situation, we talked to Collins on Wednesday, and he kind of, sort of said, well, I don't have control over what the coaches do, so I just have to try to do my best and play my role when I'm in the game and get my opportunities. But Dave Baldwin said that he was really impressed with how Collins had handled himself this week in practice, that, he kind of had an extra little bit of motivation or extra little bit of fire and saying, hey, I want to try to take this job back or show what I can do. So, and facing adversity, I mean, Collins is a true freshman and was handed the job after performing really well in the season opener against Weber State. So it's kind of like you're going to go through stumbling blocks, and life is a journey and football is a journey, and it's how, you know, you handle those types of things. Nick Mitchell, on the other hand, I mean, he's got to be he's feeling really good right now because he was actually third on the depth chart for most of the season. He had been beat out by Marcus McMarion during fall camp for that backup job, and actually McMarion shared some time with Collins at the beginning of the year when they were trying to figure out who would be the starter. So it's kind of the old cliche where you always got to be ready, but Nick Mitchell went from third on the depth chart to second on the depth chart to getting a lot of playing time and playing down the stretch against Colorado, as you mentioned. So he just kind of brings a little different dynamic. He's a little more accurate with his arm, and especially on those intermediate types of routes. So, again, we'll see how the health situation with Collins moving forward. But if they're both able to play, I think that's just, again, the best way that they feel like they can move the football and score points right now, and that they got to make other teams, their opponents, game plan for different looks and different types of wrinkles, like I said. And so to watch this offense evolve over the second half of the season, I think will be really interesting, given that Collins is healthy enough to continue to play.
Well, I mean, do you think, you know, I didn't know personally that Nick Mitchell was a third string and then jumped up and then, you know, got that significant playing time, especially last week against Colorado. Do you think part of the reason they just kind of, they weren't able to close out that game is that, Mitchell just doesn't have the chemistry that the other quarterbacks have with the, you know, your great wide receivers in Villamont and Bolden?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a lot to ask any quarterback to go make your college debut and go lead a game-winning drive. Yeah, he had three chances to do it. Oregon State's defense that forced three consecutive three and outs against Colorado and gave the ball back to the offense on three different times, and Mitchell just couldn't get it done. He threw an interception on the last play on fourth down that kind of sealed the game for Colorado. But certainly, like I said, I mean, it's a lot to ask any young player to go lead a game-winning drive in his first collegiate start. So, you know, I don't know if the chemistry thing is, I mean, I don't think he has as much chemistry maybe as Seth Collins did because he wasn't getting as many reps, but he got a lot of reps in the spring, and he actually came out of the spring as the other contender besides Collins for a starting job. And then Marcus McMarion had this late surge during the summer and then during the beginning part of camp to overtake Mitchell. So all of them have gotten a pretty good amount of playing time. And Mitchell kind of made a similar push compared to, like, much like what McMarion did. He did that during the last couple of weeks and really, you know, showed a lot of improvement and showed that he deserved to get that playing time. So, yeah, that's going to be something to watch as far as how these receivers and how the quarterback, you know, kind of play off each other and this and that. And again, that they, you know, are going to be seeing potentially both quarterbacks at different times in a different series. And we've asked the receivers about that a little bit, and they said it doesn't feel that much different. So take that for what you will. But again, it was a difficult or, you know, first big challenge for Nick Mitchell, in, you know, playing in a tight game and being asked to drive the team down the field to win in your first start.
Yeah, that's no easy situation to be put in. Well, you know, speaking of the wide receivers, you know, one of the surprises, at least from my perspective, looking at Oregon State, has been Ryan Nall and his production out of the running back spot. Can you give us a little bit more insight into who Nall is and what to expect from him this coming week?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's a local kid. He's from the Portland area and was the state player of the year 2 years ago. He's a redshirt freshman, and both coaching staff, obviously Mike Riley and that crew, recruited Nall, and now Gary Anderson's crew is coaching him. Both of those coaching staffs have been completely enamored with Ryan Nall basically since he set foot on campus, because he's a great blend of size, toughness, athleticism, and he can play a variety of different positions. And so that's been the biggest challenge for him since he got to Oregon State, is finding the right spot for him. He's played H-back, he's played tight end, he's now at running back, and they've really needed him at that spot just because they've been hit really hard with injuries. So the Colorado game was really his first time to get a lot of playing time, and he definitely took advantage of it. And he's a really tough runner. He bounced off a lot of tackles, gained a ton of yards after contact against the Buffaloes, and actually has some pretty good athleticism and speed as well for his size. And he's able to catch the ball out of the backfield. He can make some plays in space. He really hasn't had a huge chance to do that yet, but he has the ability. So it's a good for a season that's gone pretty badly for Oregon State. He's kind of been a good bright spot. He's, you know, again, a local kid, so a lot of fans are pretty excited about him. And Gary Anderson was so complimentary of Ryan Nall after the Colorado game. He called him a war daddy and said, I want 30 or 40 guys just like that on my team just because of all those qualities that I just mentioned. So, you know, he's gonna be in the backfield for sure and see some playing time. They're hoping that Storm Bars Wood, who's the senior and the normal starter, he's been kind of dinged up all season long and didn't really play a whole lot against Colorado. They're hoping that he will be back. But Nall is definitely going to be that complimentary guy, and you know, you should expect to see him get a fair amount of carries on Saturday.
All right. Well, I will be keeping my eye out for him. Utah fans especially have come to appreciate a running back who can take a tackler's hit, bounce off him, and keep running, as we've watched Devontae Booker do it for a season and a half now.
Sure.
You know, one thing I'd like to touch on is, you know, since joining the Pac-12, Utah and Oregon State, I believe it's 2-2. It's a dead even series. And then you add the fact that Kalani Sitake and Gary Anderson both have Utah roots and are now coaching at Oregon State. And I know earlier in the year when the recruiting season was hot, a lot of Utah fans circled this game as a chance to, like, stick it to them. What kind of vibe or rivalry-type feeling is there, if any, in Corvallis?
Yeah, it's interesting. Of course, a lot of questions this week for Gary Anderson and for Kalani Sitake were about their times at Utah, their relationship with Kyle Whittingham. Gary and Kyle are still very, very close and talk pretty much almost every week. Gary jokes, not this week, but I'll still probably send them a couple of joking texts or whatnot. So, you know, I think on this side, at least from the coaching perspective, it's been a week where they've just, you know, been very complimentary and shown a lot of respect and are very appreciative of what Kyle Whittingham has done for both of their careers. And both of them are frankly excited to get to go back to Salt Lake City. I mean, Gary Anderson, his family is very much still rooted there, his brothers, his mom, you know, that type of thing. So it's going to be a homecoming. And obviously Sitake played a big role in building Utah's defense. And so he's very familiar with that personnel and said he's looking forward to going back to, you know, the state where he grew up and knows very well. So from that perspective, the rivalry talk, I don't know if that's the case. But from, like, fans and that type of thing, I think that the only rivalry feelings are because of, yeah, Utah fans getting riled up. And so when Utah fans, like, get mad and get snarky and you know, poke the bear, so to speak, then you kind of want to fire back. So that's going to be really interesting to see how that, you know, plays, not just this year, but moving forward. I'm with you in that I think before the season, maybe there was even more hubbub around this game just because of the recruiting stuff, because of the coaching moves, and because of just the general familiarity between the two programs. But now that both seasons have gone so differently, I don't know if there's the same buzz surrounding the game from that perspective. I mean, you'd probably be able to give me a better answer on how it's playing out in Utah, but that's just sort of my feeling as far as how it's playing out with the Oregon State people.
Yeah, no, I think it's kind of a mixed bag. I know there are a lot of Utah fans that definitely want to win this game, but I don't know if it's as fiery as it was before the season. You know, before the season, people were like, yeah, you know, one of the key wins I want to get, Oregon State, really want to beat them. And then, of course, like you've mentioned, I mean, we've got two completely different ends of the spectrum for seasons between Oregon State and Utah now. But, you know, ultimately, you know, a question that's kind of been brought up is, you know, because of Gary Anderson's ties to Utah, there's this question of if Kyle, you know, with the rumors of Kyle Whittingham being top candidate at other coaching spots, whether Gary Anderson would take a Utah job. The one question I've seen floating around between Utah fans is, what is Gary Anderson's identity? What is his kind of thumbprint you would see on a team coached by Gary Anderson? I'm wondering if a little over halfway through the season, if you can see that kind of thumbprint on the Oregon State team that we could identify.
Yeah, I mean, I think what he wants his identity as a coach to be is He's very much, and it sounds super cliche, but he's very much about the players. I mean, their motto is players make plays, players win games. And so he wants to be a player's coach, and he wants to treat the players well. He wants to make them feel special. He wants to make them feel like they're at a big time program, whether it's at a place like Oregon State or Wisconsin, or whether it's at somewhere like Southern Utah or Utah State, you know, the first two programs that he really built and coached as a head coach. So that's everything from, you know, the meal plans to the gear to, you know, just the conversations and feeling like you can go up to the coach's office and hang out and talk, and that he's not this like big mythical figure, you know, that CEO that a lot of college football coaches have become, which in a way is kind of a necessity with the way that the game has gone. But he tries to be very personable. Again, his personality, he's very direct and intense, but it's not like in a mean or demeaning type of way. He's just very like, this is what we need to do. This is how we're going to get there, and be on the ship or don't be on the ship. So, yeah, again, if you've watched the drive, as you've referenced a couple of times, like you've kind of seen that in his pregame and halftime and postgame locker room talks and in the way he deals with the players at practice and stuff. So I think from like a philosophy standpoint, that's sort of what Gary Anderson has tried to implement here. And then of course, you know, as a football team, he's a defensive coach, obviously, came up with Kyle Whittingham, and so there are a lot of similarities there as far as philosophy and what they want to do on that side of the football. And then they want to run a spread offense. They want to have a quarterback that's mobile and can make plays with his arm and his legs. And you know, Chuck Eaton at Utah State, obviously, is a prime example of that, kind of his first guy that he had in that type of role. So they want to get the ball to guys in space, and they want to score, and they want to be up-tempo. So, yeah, that's sort of what they're trying to implement at Oregon State. And, again, I don't know. It's year one, so is it fully entrenched in a complete way yet? Probably not, but certainly in the first almost a year now that Gary Anderson has been here, that's what they're trying to build.
All right. Well, Gina, you know, thanks for taking some time out of your day to talk with me on the Torn by Sports Lunch Break. As I do call this the Lunch Break podcast, and I'm wondering if you could give me what your favorite thing is for lunch.
Oh, wow. Gosh. Wow. That's a great question. You know, I'm always up for a good burger if I'm you know, somewhere where that's a good place, or again, a good sandwich. I tend to work during my lunch break, so I go, you know, when I'm at practice and working in Corvallis, I'm like somewhere where I can hole up and use your Wi-Fi for like 3 or 4 hours. That's kind of my one requirement. But yeah, I'm not too picky as far as I'll try all kinds of, you know, different things. But yeah, if you give me a good burger and fries, I'm pretty happy with that.
All right. Well, I got, you know, I don't know how much time you're going to have being in here, flying in tonight and being here Saturday, but a couple places that have been recommended to me by Utah writers I've interviewed is a place called Scatty's, and they have a pretty good burger. So you might want to give that place a shot.
Okay, awesome. And if all else fails, you guys have In-N-Out, so I'm super stoked about that. I grew up in Phoenix, so I you know, I've been an In-N-Out fan my whole life, so there's actually one In-N-Out in Oregon, but it's like way south, so it's like 4 hours away. So I will probably hit In-N-Out as soon as I get out off of the airplane today. That's kind of my plan.
All right, well, enjoy In-N-Out. I hope you enjoy your trip to Salt Lake, and hopefully we'll have it, if at the least, an entertaining game come Saturday.
All right, I'm looking forward to it. Thanks so much.
This has been a Torn Life Sports production.